Every day I wake up with a single dream running through my head. To throw a little stone into a mighty stream and watch the ripples as they spread. If you want to make a ripple, if you want to make a wave, playing safe and thinking small doesn't move the ball at all. There's humanity to save. An excerpt from the song Ripple from the movie Spirited. Hi, I'm Ansi and welcome to my podcast For the Love of Group Fitness. I've been a multidisciplined group fitness instructor for over 30 years. I'm a trainer, and as well as having a yoga studio and a network marketing business, I help fit pros kickstart and build successful businesses. This podcast is about the crazy yet wonderfully addictive world of group fitness and what we as instructors do and don't do for the love of it. Hello! So this week we have an incredible guest I've known for years who is all about unlocking your true potential through the power of group fitness. But of course I'm talking about Dave Kyle, who has dedicated his career to helping individuals and teams reach new heights. Dave Kyle's journey in group fitness has been nothing short of remarkable. As the former training manager for Lesnar's UK, he was then shipped over to the US and looked after the US team for a while. And he's now club manager for Les Mills Hoyt Club in New Zealand. I hope I pronounced that correctly. He has been at the forefront of the industry, witnessing firsthand the transformative effects of emotional connection within a group setting. Dave understands that true success in group fitness lies in creating an emotional bond between participants and fostering a sense of community and support beyond the gym's four walls. In today's episode, we'll dive deep into the power of emotional connection in group fitness, exploring how it can motivate and empower us to push our boundaries and achieve more than we ever thought possible. So get ready to get inspired as Dave shares his insights, strategies, and personal experiences that have shaped his unique approach to unleashing potential. So thank you, Dave, for being here for the love of group fitness. You're dialing in from down under. Even more down under, aren't you?
Yeah, I know. Or New Zealand,
New Zealand. So for our listeners, so we've got obviously Les Mills instructors, but we've also got freestylers, etc., who may not know you or come across you. Tell us a little bit about you and how you ended up in this industry.
That's a story. Right back to the beginning. There's always someone, I think there's, and again, I think I've said this to you before, there's always... And group fitness instructors, most group fitness instructors understand this, that someone or something draws you into group fitness. And for me, it was my fitness manager back in the day, way back in the day, called Helen Flanagan.
Oh my God, yeah.
You remember Helen, yeah?
Yeah.
And she's a legend. She's a complete legend. She was my fitness manager when I worked at the Greens, it was in Edinburgh. Yes. And I was a PT in there and doing some PT stuff. And she grabbed me one day and just says, hey, you should come in here and do this because this would be good for you and come and see this class. And she dragged me around the corner to Studio One and kind of peered through the window and there was like a class kicking off and it was like, I don't know, it was about 50 people in there and it was going crazy. And she goes, you should do this, PT, you know, you got up there, you could be good at this, your connection and stuff, and that'll be clients for you and things. And I was like, yeah, I don't know. And then she sent me on a module with, oh man, who was it? Kathy Formby.
Oh, God.
Kathy Formby, you remember
that was
Kathy?
A whirlwind. I still keep in touch with her.
Kathy was lovely. Kathy trained me way back in the day, and that was my introduction to body pump. I didn't even know what it was. I hadn't taken a class. I just pitched up on a module. That was the old module where you did the
3 days. You didn't get the video or anything beforehand.
You pitched up. Yeah, you turned up, and then they told you what you like. You gave you your tracks, and I got a lunges track and then a shoulders track. It was lunges and shoulders they gave me. And it's all new to me. As you see, I was just a guy coming out the forces that had bumped into, bumbled into fitness, because I actually had a wee stint in accounting. I should tell you that first. I had a wee stint in accounting before that. It just wasn't for me. It's crazy. I mean, I was sitting there and you could hear the clock ticking. Every minute of the day, you could actually hear the clock tick on the wall. I was like, oh, this is killing me. So I managed to survive there for a little while, but it was not for me. So I had to move out, and I moved into fitness from there. But I trained with Kathy way back in Edinburgh, and I remember, as I say, pitching up and seeing this just energy that she was. You know what she's like? She was just a ball of energy when you arrive.
Absolutely, yeah.
And I got this lunges track, complete panicked about it. I didn't know what the hell I was doing. It's like group fitness and stuff. Didn't do it. And then you had to go away and learn it overnight. And it's like, man, I'm never even going to learn this. What do you do? And I went back and taught next again day. Anyway, it was good. It's a great weekend. Kathy was amazing. We had a great weekend, got off, and I thought, actually, I like this. It's good fun, different way of training. And we went back to the club on the Monday and did the usual you did back in the day. I went back in, body pump instructor and everyone turned up. Like, you got to get in there and teach. So I bounced in to cover the 6 o'clock Monday night class or something on body pump, and it was packed. And I got up there, like, just, you know, it's like just out of training. I only knew math for like two tracks.
I was going to say, you kind of learned the whole release.
No, didn't. And it was only through repetitiveness. Like, it was only through because I didn't learn anything, I just did my two tracks. But putting music on it was my worst experience of my life. It was like horrible. It was like,
did you teach those two, three tracks on repeat for the whole hour?
I taught the whole thing. Like, I bumbled my way through the whole thing.
Oh, man.
And it just, like, ridiculous. And it was, as I say, it was my worst introduction to group fitness, because I just bumbled my way through it. And I was like, I got away with that. I don't know how I got away with it. Probably connection. But I came out and I was just like, never again. This is a nightmare. I'm not doing this. From there, I went on and did my old video and stuff and sent it in and got it, you know, got certified.
Why
stuff.
Though? Why, if you had such a bad experience, did you carry on?
I don't know. I love the module. And I think that goes back to, again, when we say why the instructors do what they do. I love the module. Like, Kathy was awesome, and there was some good people on it. And it was just that being around like-minded people and actually trying to help and reach out to other people to do, you know, to help them in life and stuff. You do, just who I am. You know me as well. It's my whole why I do what I do. So that was the beginnings of my why. And it was a nice way to do it, because it put you in front of a bigger group of people rather than just your one-on-one PTs and the guys you're working with. So there was that stronger drive underneath it. But I didn't take away from the trauma.
But that's the thing, it's traumatic, right? That very first class you teach. And you kind of think there are lots of other instructors out there who probably went through that and then never completed and got certified. You know?
Maybe it's just who I am, my personality and stuff is just, because the next one I got in, it's like, well, that's it. It can't be worse than that, right? So whatever I do now is going to be better than what I just did. Because it's like, I'm never going to feel that again. Although I'll tell you a wee story in a bit that I did feel it again, but that was much later on. But my next time I taught, I was like, I can't be worse than that, because I didn't know anything. And I managed to get through it. So next one's going to be better and better. So it was, once you get in and once you get over and the fear of, it's learning the choreography is the big thing, doing the right thing. Because it's choreography driven, you have to learn it.
The hard piece. It's so hard. Like, I've not taught body pump for since I've had my studio, so about 9 years or so, if not more, right? And end of last year, I've been going to classes because I've got the starts of osteoporosis genetically in my family. So I thought, I'll do weight training. I find the gym boring. I'll go to body pump. And she's off on maternity. And you can't get body pump instructors these days. So I was like, I can't say no, right? I'm in the class every week. So I've decided on maternity cover. This is my second month, but it's still the choreography. And I know people say, oh yeah, you know, just kind of like, you can make it up. I can't. I just can't. If I do freestyle, it's fine. But the minute it's got that label on of like Les Mills program, like my head can't just make it up.
Yeah. It's funny. I've been doing it for so long that like I jump in a hammock now and just jump in and do some team teaching, and I'm actually fine with it now, because even, I think you've been doing it for so long, it just becomes, you can almost sit and listen to a song now and you hear the verse, chorus, the ones, two,
three,
but ones,
you see, I find it easier with the old music to do that. The newest stuff releases, I'm like, I don't know this track.
I'm maybe not.
Give me a bit of the old stuff, you know.
I'm maybe a wee bit more current. So
I know you're a bit more current. I'm like, you know, the old stuff, like Summer of 69.
Oh, yeah, triceps, wasn't it? Yeah.
I can't remember even that what that is. Chest.
The triceps track.
Chest
or triceps. Yeah. I remember that one. But that's how we got started. It was way back in the day, and it was just the same, very traumatic to start with, but I kind of just laughed it off and gone with it, because that's kind of who I am. And as I say, you give something a good go, it's all learning, right? At the end of the day, this is what it is, and you can't walk it back. Once it's done, it's done. Once it's out there, it's like, well, that was that. Let's see how it goes next time.
So for our listeners who don't know, where are you, you know, what's that journey been from that first traumatic experience? Where has your group fitness journey taken you?
It started in Edinburgh with Helen, Lou Helen Flanagan. She was such, again, such a great influence on me and such an awesome person that was just dedicated to, you know, it's like just someone, she just gave everything and tried to help you along the way, lots of support. So that kind of rubbed off, and it was nice to see and feel. So from there, I went to probably Loughborough, was it? You'll know the old Loughborough events, right? So I used to go down to Loughborough every year and do the big fitness event. And that's where I got exposed to the real kind of, the real Les Mills, I guess, as you call it. Because it was actually two good friends of mine now, Susan and Steve, was my sort of first real experience of going along to Loughborough and seeing these two people on stage. They're like, who are these guys? Like, I've never even seen them before. Look different, sound different. Where are they from? They're not from here. Seeing them up on stage and smashing out the body pump and things, that was just like, wow, okay, that's different. There's a different energy about what they were. So that was my first sort of introduction to probably the Les Mills side of it. I mean, because not even at that point, I was still not, it was just body pumps, just a class I taught. But until I saw them, there was a connection into Les Mills rather than just the body pump. And then I got, I think it was one after, a couple of Loughboroughs after that, I got actually chatting to Steve, and I found that his background, he's got ancestry back to Scotland and stuff, and he goes up to Edinburgh and he loved all that sort of thing. So we started chatting and we had a good, just had it off, I guess. We just kind of had it off. And of course, after that, you end up talking about things and training teams. And back in the day, you'd always complain about stuff. It's like, I don't come along here. Why am I going along to watch this guy do this thing here? It doesn't make sense. And he always said to me, well, if you're feeling that strong about it, why don't you try and do it yourself? And I said, yeah, I don't want to do that. I don't want to do it. I don't want to do it. But eventually, I did. So eventually, I put my hat in the pile with a boot camp.
Yes, I remember your boot camp.
You remember that bicep track?
I remember bicep track because I think I have my foot on on Sean's ass, right?
Trying to keep him up, yeah.
He was trying to keep up with you. It was hilarious.
That was awesome. I guess me doing that was a case of trying, again, one of my philosophies in life, and if you want to see change, then try and create the change you want to see if you can. So when the opportunity came up, it was like, okay, let me do this. And if it's meant to be, it's meant to be. And we went down and had that few days at Loughborough where you really did. Again, that's old school stuff we're talking about, right? You went through a proper boot camp where it was like old school boot camp. How would you put it? Army style boot camp where you just pushed and pushed and pushed and back to back to back, and it was just good stuff, but great energy, great people, again, just lots of people, lots of energy. And that culminated in that bicep track. That was so funny when I saw Sean getting up. It was car wash, wasn't it? It was the car wash. And I saw him looking at me. Now that's the thing, right? Because we'd been slammed for like,
It was the last track
of the last day. It was a big celebration thing. Let's do the bicep track, car wash. And I put my weight on. I was like, I'm done. And I put my weight on and I saw him watching me. And then he matched it. So I put another kg on and then he went heavier.
Yeah.
So I went heavier again. And I was like, right, let's do this. And the two of us just went for it. I just kept looking at him thinking, I'm not giving in. And he just died a death.
You know when
you've got someone, right? Because I was ready to pack in as well. But when I looked over and saw him like sweating and you holding him up, I was like, yeah, I've got him here. And just at that moment in time, he kind of looked up at me and he's like, looking up at me. And I was looking back. I'm just one of those, just meant to be. And I smiled at him and just said, yeah.
You did. He was like, yeah, I got this. You're dead.
But inside, I was dying. That was a fun piece. And once we got on the team, it's just another whole new level of learning and experience and being able to share mainly who we were, right? Because that's, I guess, what I got from all the trainers and presenters and stuff. It's an opportunity to really drive your why, your purpose, to put that bigger sort of message out of care and compassion to people and training and things. And you learn as you go along. You're kind of rough to start with, right? You're kind of a rough egg to start with. And then you learn as you go along. And that was my second terrible traumatic experience, if I can tell you. It was my first time presenting as a new presenter on the team. And it was up in Scotland in Glasgow. And I was there with Sean. He texted me the night before and says, right, here's your four tracks. Can't remember what it was, but he gave me my four tracks that I was going to teach. I was like, yeah, no worries, bro. See you in the morning. What time are you going to be there? We'll bounce over things. I'll get there nice and early. And off I went that night. You know what it's like sitting brand new, my first time presenting as a new presenter on the training team. And I went through it all and I was like learning all my tracks and stuff. Went to sleep, get us up in the morning, went to Glasgow. And then Sean meets me and he's like, oh man, I've done my backing. You recognize? I didn't know at the time. I didn't know. I thought he was taking the piss. He was like, no, I did my backing. I was like, what do you mean? I goes, yeah, good one, bro. I says, yeah, whatever. He goes, no, man, because I'm serious. I've done my backing.
Yeah.
And I was like, and then that just hit me, that wall. Oh, it goes, you'll need to do this on your own. It's like a full workshop again. And now I'd only learned my four freaking tracks. It's like, again, it was the same thing I had back in the Greens days. It's like,
no.
I only learned my four tracks. But I knew the other ones as in you go through it to learn the, but I only did mine because that's the ones I'm going to focus on. And I was just like, same thing again. I gets up there and taught this thing to a room packed full of instructors back in Glasgow, my home country, the whole thing. First time on stage, and he's up the back, and then it's like, if I was getting stuck, because I was just winging it, at some points I was actually winging it, and he's at the back going 2-2, 1-3, and stuff. And then in between, I'm just talking, throwing out cues and trying to connect, and I was like, it's got to be at least four reps. So every time I got to like two reps in, the three reps in, I'd look up the back, and he'd go out 4-1, and I'd go, 4-1, and go into that way, and it was like, oh man, but another traumatic experience.
Oh,
so ever from that one, I was like, that's it. I should have learned the first time. First time, what is it that saying again? Fool me once, my fault, fool me twice, you know, that type of thing. So after that one, I was like, that's it. Anytime I go and do anything, I'm going to know everybody's stuff inside out. Everybody. Whether if it's education sessions, whether it's pump, whether it's anything, combat, I was learning everything. I was actually coming, I was coming to workshops knowing how to do body jam. It's like, because you just never know what was going to happen. But that was another big, nice sort of steep learning curve.
Oh, terrible. I mean, they're terrible in some ways, but then when you look back, it's funny. And you know, the experience, who knows, for the instructors, right? They would have either enjoyed it or hated it. I remember flying. I think I was down here by then in the Southwest, and I flew to Newcastle for a quarterly, and I was just there to do body balance, right? So I just had flip-flops and stuff. And there was meant to, Denise Burr was there for body pump, and then Shay was meant to be there for body combat. But Shay had a car accident along the way. So I was on stage doing body balance. Denise comes over in the front of the stage, going like this. And I went up to her. She goes, can you teach combat? And by this point, I mean, I used to do combat, but I wasn't a trainer anymore. So I don't learn this stuff. Luckily, I had looked at it, but I'd not even practiced it. I certainly didn't look at the cool down. And she says, the office has just phoned and says, can you do the combat? And I was like, in the middle of the body balance workshop. And I was like, what? I have no trainers. I have bare feet.
Perfect.
Real authentic experience. And I had to say to the instructor, I says, look, you know, you can do it. We can run through it, but I don't really know it. It was like terrible experience.
But you're right, because all like instructors, because I see it now, and you see it right through your whole sort of career, right? Instructors get the panic on that stuff. You get really worked up about, especially like the launches and the first time to teach and all that sort of stuff. But when you've come and had all these traumatic experiences along the way, you actually learn to realise to say, hey, you know what? It's just group fitness, and actually, it's just that it's connection just you make when you're up there. Just let it happen. You know, just let it happen, because your own magic will shine through. And you heard me talk about this over the years, right? Because it is you that brings the magic to the room. Choreography is just something you do. It's just this other stuff. Yes, it matters, but it doesn't really matter. It's you that matters.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. I fell off a stage. Newcastle again. Body combat again. Warm up. Carl McCartney's on stage with me. And we shuffled back, and I shuffled too far back. And my leg went off the stage, scraped my shin, carried on, blood running down my leg. Another authentic combat experience.
Well, it happens, right? It happens in the best, like it happens in the best of times. I mean, Sean, like crying out, like all we're doing now is recalling all the things that went wrong. But that's good fun. Do you remember, Sean? I can't remember what workshop it was. It was myself and Niamh and Sean were teaching. Do you remember this one?
Which one is this?
I was down south somewhere, and I can't even remember the name of the venue now. But Sean, Niamh, and myself were teaching, and I was doing the squat track. And that's when
With a bar.
Yeah, when I was like teaching the Scots track and I had Sean on one side and Neve on the other, and I'm teaching away, and all I heard was an almighty crash. And I thought the lighting had fell off the roof. I was like, oh, what's going on? And I turned round to my right and all I could see,
oh, bless, Sean
lying face down on the floor. And I swear, I thought he had died. I thought, oh man, he's dead, something's happening. Like, it looked serious because he wasn't moving, he was just lying there. And I was like, oh. So I kind of shuffled across, and Neve shuffled across, and I could hear all the footsteps running up the back onto the stage. And then, like, a minute later, Sean appears with the bar on his back again. I was like, what was that all about? It's like, you'll do anything to upstage me. But I seemingly slipped, so it was a sweaty floor, and his feet were going too wide, and they just collapsed. So.
Yeah, because those stages were terrible, right?
Back in the day, it was proper, yeah.
Splinters and stuff on the stage, yeah.
It was a wild west, but it was great fun. But like, same thing, right? Like, the show went on, and it was like there was no—I don't know—you just, you kind of just go on with it. That's like, you learn that, I guess. Especially in the training teams, you learn it's just you've got to, there is no option. You just got to go on with it. It was all good fun. I mean, we could go on and on like this. We could spend about 40 podcasts just talking about it.
Well, we might have a part two.
That was my introduction to like the whole. From just teaching. I mean, there was a lot of stuff in between where I was teaching at different clubs and things, but it was just doing the usual instructor thing, you know, bouncing from clubs to clubs, teaching, doing your 15 classes a week. And that was, once I got into the training team, you were doing my pretty much full-time fitness. I was doing the Monday to Friday morning teaching, and then I was away doing modules and stuff at the weekends and whatever. And that's what we did, right? It's just, we did that, and we jumped on a flight and flew away somewhere, and then jumped on taxis, and then walked 100 miles and appeared at a venue. Top people got back Sunday night and then got back to work on Monday if you were lucky.
Yeah.
otherwise you arrived on Monday morning and went straight into work.
And we've stayed in some dives over the years.
Oh, yeah.
I've stayed in dives where you're like, you're itching because you just don't know what the sheets were like. I've stayed in places that I thought was haunted. So like, slept with the lights on. I slept in a room above a pub and the door didn't lock. So and there was the Rugby World Cup going on, and I was just like jammed a chair underneath it. So no one would break. Yeah,
I've been in the obligatory pub room where you actually arrive and you knock on the door and there's nobody in, and you go in, and there's like a note on the wall saying, Dave, your keys in this drawer. And you're like, okay, find your way to your room, and it's room above a pub. Yeah.
Oh, there's some of the stories of that. But so you've kind of done that, and then took the next step, which was basically to look after the team. You know, you were looking after the UK trainer team for Les Mills.
Yeah.
Why did you put yourself forwards?
Question. Honest answer. So it was the same thing as like I started when I did the whole training team journey in the first place. In fact, all my same piece along, it's like when you think change needs to happen. And I was at a point of, it was either pack it in or step up. I was at that stage. It's like, okay, I say I'm walking away from this because I've had enough. It's just too much hard work, too much standing in the rain and walking miles and back end of nowhere to get to modules. And you're not feeling valued for it. And you understand what I mean, Nancy, be part of the team at the time. It's just not feeling valued for it. And not seeing any, it wasn't changing for the better. It was just, I couldn't see any light at the end of the tunnel. But it was exactly at that point where I was like, you know what, I've had enough. And then I had a conversation, funnily enough, in Edinburgh with Philip Mills. So I was teaching up in Edinburgh, and I was like, in my head, it's like, this is my last one. It's in Edinburgh. It's my last gig. I'm going to, after this one, it's done. I'm finished. And then I had a chat with Philip after it, and this came up, and he's like, pulled me aside. He was, let me have a chat with you. He said, that's when it was released that they was going to be buying it back. So we're going to actually be buying it back off of FitPro and stuff. So he says, look, give me 6 months and see how it goes after that. Let's see if things change. Mm. And that was the bit where I kind of paused. And then I met, so I came down here for filming after that. So that was my first filming after that workshop, and I spoke to Philip. So I came down here to filming, and that's where I met Keith Burnett, who was the CEO of the UK team. And before he was the CEO, so I guess Philip was buttering him up and kind of looking, bringing him down to New Zealand. And the two of us met after filming. Mm. And him and I can still remember, Keith and I, we're just great friends. We're just right from day one, we kind of had it off. So after filming, him and I went up to a bar just behind Auckland City. There used to be a little bar in the corner. It's all changed now. Mm. And we sat down, and he says, right, I'll buy the beers, you spill the beans type thing. And we sat down, and the two of us sat there I don't know, we sat there like for hours that night, pretty much carried each other home at the end of the night and just had everything out on the table, thoughts, feelings, everything that's been going on, etc. And it wasn't long after that that Keith got announced as being the CEO of the new business. It was a startup. So once I knew he was in as the CEO, I was like, actually, this is a change. This is going to change. There's a different vibe to this. So when the opportunity came up, I kind of threw my hat in and said, it's the same thing. So it was either walk away or step up. It was no kind of sit in the middle ground for me. And I felt that I'd put my heart in my sleeve with him. You know, I told him everything. I'd been out there. So it's like, there's no point. I'm going to do it. I might as well step in now and see it through. So I went down there with my visions and plans and everything where I thought we'd go, and got the job from there for being the head trainer for the UK, which is like, it's so humbling along the way. Like, it's just, it's so humbling when you get to meet so many great people and instructors, and that opportunity is just, I wouldn't change anything for the world, you know, because it's just, you know what I mean? There's just so many people. I can't remember the thousands of people I've met and seen really good people. But that's when I stepped, and that's when you were there. You saw this. You saw the transition into that space, and you saw what we tried to do. You were there through
it. It's incredible. And I remember, but I also remember when you said you were leaving as well. And oh my God, I think everybody was like crying their eyes out, the team. That was the impact you had.
That was in Greece. That was in.
It was one of the summits. I can't remember which one. Was it Greece?
Yeah, I think it was Ibiza. Maybe Ibiza. I remember we were over there. It was something like that, I think. We just build great bonds, I think, but that's what we do as instructors, you know. And after everything that goes on in that space, everybody, and I still live by this to the day, intention's big with me, right? Intention's big. If someone comes and does something from good intention, I don't care if you get right or wrong, I'm going to step up, help and support you. If the intention was right, if the intention was positive and it was for the right reasons, you know me, I would stand behind you 1,000%. You've got to flip that as well, you know. If someone's intention's not right, then you just can't do it because it pulls against values. But I do believe everybody on that team just had great values. We were absolutely all aligned. We had great values. We had great intention. We had, you know, we believed in what we're trying to achieve. We believed in the team, the business. There's just lots of real positive energy around it. And that's maybe why it was such a traumatic event when I got to Ibiza, I think it was, and says, hey, I'm off to the US. That's probably why, because we had built such a
really awesome team. I guess if you think about it, it's, you know, I'm also trying to relate to, you know, the instructors at ground level that might be listening in, is that there are times when, you know, in all our jobs and careers, and not even necessarily in the fitness industry, where we're part of a team and the team gets quite dysfunctional at some point.
Yeah.
You know, and then doing the work to pull that team out of that dysfunction. So that they do feel bonded, they do feel part of the bigger picture, they do feel like they've got a part to play in the vision of the business. And perhaps, you know, like we've done that, that's definitely in my years of Les Mills, I think it's with any business, it always goes through that, right? When there's change. But instructors, they're freelance, how does, you know, can you kind of, you know, share any your thoughts about that? Because sometimes you just rock up, you teach, you go to another club and you teach, and you're not even part of a team, but then you get treated like an employee almost when you're not, you know?
It's hard. Like that change that we went through, as you say, we had a real dysfunctional team, and it was not throwing anybody under the bus. That's just the way the Fit Pro ran it, etc. It's just the way the team was set up. It was the culture that was there. It took a lot of hard work, you know this, from everybody to set us on a new pathway and set us on a new vision. And there's a lots of coaching and lots of mentoring went on, and development of the people, and patience and time and energy went into everybody on that team in the right way as well. A lot of care and love for everybody on that team. But you're right, instructors, and that's something actually now being the club manager over at one of the clubs here in Auckland, it's almost like I get a chance to walk that talk, right? Because I get to do that. Mm. And a big thing that I've been an advocate for across the countries that I've bounced around, especially the last one I was in the US, you know, I had a lot of meetings with exec teams across the US, with big corporates and things, and talking to them about the subject, about the value effect of the GFI, about the group fitness instructor. Because I do believe, like you said, it's out there, the truth's there. They're undervalued and underpaid, you know, that's the way it is. And I've had this conversation with so many people at all levels of business. But because I try to keep my foot in both sides of the camp, because you have to listen to reason from everybody, right? You have to be reasonable and listen to that reason that everybody brings to the table, because nobody, again, like I go back to that thing, intentionality. Nobody's intentionally trying to do anybody harm or wrong. Business sometimes thinks about business bottom line profits. because that's what they're measured on. That's their metrics. That's their livelihood. That's their mortgages and homes and families and stuff. And over here, you've got instructors. So you're kind of standing with a foot in both camps, trying to work this one out, because I see it both ways. But the truth is that the group fitness instructor is such a valuable asset to any club, group fitness itself. But only if that asset is part of the team. So that's the key, is what you're getting, right? And that's what I mean. It's like you've got to be part of the team, because if you're not part of the team, the vision, the picture, the bigger picture of the club, of the corporation, whatever it might be, the number of clubs, then you ain't going to feel part of the team. And if you don't feel part of the team, you're not going to be part of the team. And it's just, there's a disconnect. So what I try to do and advocate for over the years is to bring teams together. So how do you play your best teams across your club? So try and bring cohesion throughout clubs, PTs, reception, GFIs, everybody, bring them together, because they're all one team. At the end of the day, that's what's driving your bottom line. And they're all, if you can get them working together as one team, it's back to that old adage, right? You know, together we're stronger.
Yes.
Whereas most clubs were playing in their own dysfunctions. So there was GF over here, PT over here. Like, they're running in like silos. And it's, I think, the ones that can pull them together. And that was down to club managers, district managers, you know, gym owners. The ones that could see that and bring cohesion and value and purpose, like what we did across the TAP teams, was when you bring a real purpose that aligns everybody, brings everybody together, give them a good why, value them all, and show them all how to play the part. Give them the numbers and figures. We did this a couple of weeks ago. We sat down with the GFI team and delivered a Zoom meeting to them all, going through the financials and the figures and numbers and saying, this is where we're at and this is where we're trying to get to. And this is what drives our, you know, our activation in the community. This is how we make a difference. And this is how you then play a part in that. So it's not just you walking through the door and teaching a body pump class. It's you walking through the door to change everybody in that Howick Region's community, their lives. You have a real influence in that space. And then show them, you know, draw that dotted line back to, this is how you do it. And this is how you've done it here. And this is how we help and develop you to get into that space. So it's having, it's seeing the value in the group fitness space, but also making the instructors feel valued.
Yes.
So when you get that right, that starts to bring that cohesive bond and allows that nurturing to grow. And this takes time. I mean, around the world, we're just not there. And even here, like, the money's probably better here, I guess, a little bit than I've seen over around the world. There's a bit better pay, but there's still no real structure to what I see, as in who's, you know, rewarding the real, I guess, the advocates for the gym. So who's your real ambassadors, I would call them. This is what I had in the US. Is how do you identify people that are really selling your club, really knocking it out the park? And then how do you use them almost like a marketing tool? Because what I've noticed, and this is clubs globally, not just Les Mills, it's like clubs globally, they spend a lot of money on marketing. You will spend lots of dollars on marketing. So why don't you shift a little bit of that marketing budget into the GF space? Pick four or five influencers who have got big followers and have a big influence in your membership. And pay them more, and because, you know, they can draw in more. They can be ambassadors for your club and for your instructors, and they can really grow the whole GF space. And that, to me, is like a real, or one way you could actually draw the link into that, is to how do you utilize that space better, not just see it as another tag on. So it's just group fit, because group fit is still perceived as just group fitness.
Yeah, but it's huge, isn't it, in terms of retention? I think certainly, like, okay, I've got my own yoga studio, but I also teach for a club chain, right? And the people that come to group fitness, some of them, you know, I joked earlier on about, like, me doing maternity cover for body pump at the moment, but some of them have been doing body pump for, like, as long as the club's had it, which is like 10 years plus, if not more. They're still there.
Well, I think that's Les Mills clubs over New Zealand are getting it. Right, because obviously it's Les Mills, right? They're worldwide known for world-class group fitness in the programming. So it makes sense that that's having a big impact at the club level over here. And we get, I think we're sitting around about 55 to 60% membership visits into group fit, which is high, you know, compared to normal clubs. I mean, I've been around the world and saw clubs sitting at, you know, under 20%, 15% people going into group fit. So it's a huge, you're right, it's an absolutely huge retention tool. And Bryce and I, actually, Bryce and I did a lot of workshops over in the US talking about this kind of stuff, about retention and about membership visits. And if we just do the basics, if we can get people in twice a week, we're going to keep them for at least 2 to 5 years. So when you get a new member coming in, the whole key is get them in twice. If you can get them in twice a week, then you're going to keep them for this 2 to 5 year period. anything less than that, you lose them. I think it's something like 50% you lose in the first 3 months and another 50% in 6 months, which actually makes sense because anybody that's in as a club manager or in the club industry knows that retention is just a hamster wheel of you bring in 1,000 new members and you lose 1,000 members and it just keeps going. So the trick is to keep bringing in 1,000, but to your point, catch that attrition. So start saving and get the retention working well. And that's where Group Fit is just stands out on its own. If you have really great instructors, a really great experience as in set up, you know, feel into the club, into the studios, vibes, mic, sound. If you have a really great experience, then the results you see is just what you said. You'll get people in that space forever. And guess what? They're your best advocates for bringing people in as well, because they'll be out there singing your praises and bringing new members in, etc. It's a huge part of the club that's, again, still not globally seen as, I just don't think we see the importance or the value in it. Yeah, or value is probably a better word for it. It's not valued, yeah, in that space.
No, and if, you know, it's not valued, then the instructors aren't as valued, are they? Rather.
So and I've had to... Now, if I'm being really honest as well, I've had to, because I've had to put the boot in the other foot when I'm sitting with the, because I've sat with so many, as I say, execs and club managers and club owners and stuff having these discussions, and they'll turn around and be brutally honest about their business and stuff. And they'll turn around and say, well, you know, I'm not paying Joe Bloggs over here X amount of money because he's effectively, he's not good enough. He's only getting four people in the class. And stuff. So there is that. You can't peel away from that. It's like, oh, yeah, fair enough, because you're not going to do it. Why would you? Why would you sit and listen to me? I'm telling you how important it is. Then you've got a guy or someone in your class or in your club who doesn't care, teaching a mediocre to best class and having a negative impact on your membership base. So that's because that's what they see. I've always had these discussions with group fitness instructors if I went around the world, is it's a two-way thing. Now, you can't sit. To me, again, it's like, well, you do. You can sit because you have a choice, right? You have a choice in life. You can actually choose to sit and do nothing about it. Or you can be the brave one and step up and try and change. And to me as an instructor, if you choose, and I've always said this, the day you choose to put a mic on and step up in the stairs, then your responsibility changes. Because if you don't want to do that, and if you're not really into it 100%, then just take the mic back off and jump down and enjoy the workout. Because if you're going to step up there, then own it. Because if we all owned it, and we all rocked it, and we all really packed the classes, and we all were really involved in our development and our growth and impact we're having and get involved with the club, get involved with the members, then I'm pretty sure that we would see a different shift in the whole fitness industry because the value would be seen by way, way more than it's actually being seen. And because I think that's part of the problem is we can talk about it, but it's not consistent across the world and across the clubs. That commitment to the club, to the members, the value is not being seen. Now, you could flip that around and say, well, why would I? The club doesn't care about me, but why would I care about the club? But then what are you going to do? Then we're stuck where we're at. If that's the case, if both people are sitting at loggerheads saying, well, I'm not shifting and I'm not shifting, we'll never shift. So someone has to shift. And to me, it's like, well, what's the problem in instructors doing that? Like, I'll make the shift. I'll step up and I'll go the extra mile and I'll do what I do. Because ultimately, actually, I'm not doing it for the money. I'm doing it for the people that are standing in front of me. I'm doing it to try and have a positive impact in the community. So that's when I get back to my why and my purpose. Actually, it doesn't matter about, you know, the money and that side of it. But if we all kind of did that, it's going back to the whole philosophy in life. You know, if we just think a bit more about giving rather than taking, then the take will come. Like we'll come back. That's the yin yang type thing. If I just focus on giving that positive energy, it'll come back. But that's me being holistic, Dave, standing on his leg.
It's a challenge, isn't it? And I think I can't remember. I've spoken quite a bit about, you know, having spoken to members at the clubs or even my yoga studio and how they've used the term, I've never used it, but the members have used the term transactional. They find that some instructors come and they teach. You know, there's nothing wrong, the coaching is there, etc., but it's a very transactional experience. But then on the other hand, you now have instructors who want or do this full time, and the pay hasn't increased in all the time I've been in the industry. If anything, sometimes it's gone down. So they're teaching several classes a day. They might have to go from one class in straight into another or zoom across town and teach another one, you know. So that whole, like you were saying, you know, yes, we do it. We start doing this because we love it. But at some point, it also still needs to pay the bills, right?
Absolutely.
So it's like that whole, you know, so if they don't feel appreciated, I mean, I agree. I think it's like with the personal relationship, you know, like in marriage or anything else. You know, at some point, you can't change other people. If you want change, you've got to change yourself, right? And you've got to take responsibility, which is what I think you've done. You know, you either walk away or you step up. But not everyone's like that, isn't it?
And it's tough because when you then, if I flip my club manager's hat on, or if I flip an owner's hat, or as I say, a business person looking into it, because at the end of the day, they've still got a business to run, they've still got bills to pay. So yes, we could and we should increase it. But if you increase, if you do the simple math, if I've got 100 classes running a week and I increase the instructors $10 a class, that's a big lump of money at the end of the year. And if I'm not seeing an increase in like retention or an increase in memberships, how am I going to pay for it? Because I've still got to pay for the building. I've still got to pay for everybody here. I've still got to pay for the upkeep of, you know, the actual building itself, replacing equipment. Everything costs so much money. And there is that piece to it, because you're trying to do that. It's a fine balance in the books when you're trying to work in that space. And like I said, therefore to me, it goes back to like anything in life, the value of, do I see and really feel the value of these instructors that are coming to my club? Do I feel the value of the group fitness in the club? Is it having a real valuable impact? Because if it's not, i.e. if it comes across as transactional, then I'm burning my bridges, right? Because why would I, as an owner or an investor, invest in that space if it's just a transactional thing? And like, you're not making any difference to my club other than teaching to the same 15 that come in every week. Yeah, great, but I need another 300 in this year, otherwise we're closing the doors. It's that, there's still that juxtaposition. You're kind of stuck in the middle with it, right? There's a tough one. But to me, I'm always trying to see it from both, through both lenses. It has to change. The industry has to change. But I think the industry is going to have to change anyway to survive, because of everything we've been through in the last 2 years. I think the positive things about that is group fitness has been a real light shone in that space. It shows the importance of connection, even though it might be through Zoom. Group fitness instructors around the world stepped up. They were popping phones up in the spare room inside their covers and doing whatever and teaching to the masses, you know. So it showed the impact of group fitness. It really did show it. So I think there's been a light shone in that space. So there is... change is going to have to happen. Clubs are going to, and the fitness industry is going to have to evolve and change. Because another thing about this is, it's not just about, as we've always talked about, and move towards ANSI, is moving away from the look to the feel and from fitness to wellness. We've got to go there. As an industry, we have to go there. We've got to just drop the fitness stuff, drop the look, and let's focus on the real impact of fitness and its well-being and health and wellness, and also how it makes people feel. People feel great, and that's what it is. If you can make someone feel great, then the lives are going to be better. And if the lives are better, everything else then falls into line. The real meaningful stuff falls into space. Because otherwise, if you get focused on, and I love this one, because I see the stats, and I've seen the stats globally for years, all the stats that come back from members and anybody, and we'll all resonate with this, is that nobody is ever happy with the way they look. Mm. When we go and we ask, we send surveys out to see, and how's your fitness? How's the way you look? It's always a low, a 3 or a 4 or a 2. It's a detractor, because nobody, no matter how much you train, you stand at the end of the day and you look in the mirror thinking, yeah, that's me, nailed it, look at me. No, I don't think I could be wrong, but I guess I'll be, I shouldn't say nobody. I should say a small minority of people will stand and go, look at me. Most of us will go, there's work to be done. You know, we're just never happy with that space. But that's what we try and sell. We try and sell something that's like a negative emotion. We're feeding the wrong thing.
Yeah.
So we need to change that light and shine it over here to say, well, actually, it's not about how you look, because how you look is going to be a product of what you do and how you think, more importantly. So let's go into that space. Let's talk to me about who you are, what you think, how's your life, what is it you really want to achieve? Do you want to be running about your kids at the weekend playing rugby and stuff? Right, but we can help you do that better. Do you want to go to work on Monday morning, de-stressed and feeling great, you can take on the world? Yeah, well, that's what fitness, and that's what part of this club here at Les Mills in New Zealand, and Howick, that's what we can do for you. We can help you live a better life. So it's being fit for life is that motto that we have, that sort of value that we're trying to push out. That's key to me. It's changing the messaging. And we need to start doing that as a fitness industry globally, keep changing that messaging. Because, again, Bryce was hitting me with some stats. He was over here a couple of weeks ago doing filming, and they've been doing usual surveying and stuff around the world pre- and post-pandemic and stuff, and a lot of people are moving into mind and health and well-being, so mind health, mindfulness, yoga, Pilates, body balance, all these sort of mind space. That's starting to go up. So the trend's going up in that space. People want it because that shows that people are realizing the importance of mind over body, or mind first, I should say, not over body, but you have to get the mind sorted. And again, that's another whole conversation. You know, if we don't have our mind in place, it doesn't matter what else is going on in your life. It's just, you'll be out of balance, you'll be out of sync. It won't fall into place. But if you start with the mind, everything else will tick along, which, because it's like, that'll bring consistency, continuity. You know, and once you get into that space, things start to happen. You know, other pieces start to fall into place in life. I think that's a change that's going to we'll see in the fitness industry over the next few years is big focus on shifting away from look to feel and from that fitness to wellness and well-being will be the new. And you know what I love about that is being over in the US for the past whatever it was years, a number of years I was, the YMCA over there. I used to love working with the YMCAs.
Yes.
Because they just that was their whole ethos, yeah. Was just about community.
Yeah.
So you can have really, really great conversations with the people at the YMCA and their execs and stuff, because that's what they were all about. It was just about this. And so they were always about wellness. They were always about mind and people first, even down to their teams.
Yes.
Yeah. I worked with a guy over there, Adam. He was Adam Schilling, I think his name was, and he was worked with a whole bunch of Ys over in Michigan. And he's now actually been promoted his own, doing all sorts of crazy stuff. I remember first meeting him off a flight from Chicago. And I had been told, Adam's is just not a big advocate for Les Mills and group fitness sort of space.
Right.
And I can be honest with you, that's funny, because Adam might listen, but he probably won't listen. He'll probably never hear this. But I remember meeting him, and he picked me up from the airport, and he's sitting in his car, and I kind of jumped in, and it was one of those, hey, hi. And I was like, man, who are you? And I just started the conversation. Hi, who are you, man? What do you do? And just had it off. It was a relationship. We actually stopped for a coffee before we got back to the club. Because I was going up to present this Good to Great thing that we were doing, this Good to Great piece that I had workshop. But we stopped for a coffee. And we ended up being late for the presentation, the workshop, because we just got underneath the nonsense. Like, we got underneath the brands and the names and the perceptions off. Because it was all perceptions, right? So people have perception stuff. And we just had a real honest conversation with who he was, who I was, and what we were trying to achieve in life. And we just hit it off. And it was like, it's just great. It was just like one of these conversations where it just landed. And then we went back and we delivered the workshop, and he kept calling everybody staff, and that annoyed me, because he kept saying, oh, my staff's this, my staff's that. So in front of everybody, I says, okay, I'm going to call Adam out. I'm going to hold him to account here. I says, so what I'd love for you to do, Adam, is to start calling everybody teammates. This is not your staff. This is your team.
Staff,
and you're going to lead this team to great things. I know you, because I know you're a great guy, and I've met these people, and here they're great people. You're going for great things, but this is a team. This is teamwork. It's going to make this dream work. And I think it was last year when he got that promotion or he moved on to other echelons in the YMCAs.
Yeah.
I said, hey, man, congratulations. I always knew you would do it, because he was just an awesome guy. As I said, kind guy, great heart.
Yeah.
And his reply back was, yeah, man, and I'll never forget. No, I'm taking my teammates everywhere I go. There's no staff.
No.
And it's these little things, right? It's these little things that resonate and land. You think, yeah, okay, well, that whole journey was worthwhile. Just if that was the one positive thing that came out of it, that was something.
Perception, isn't it? It's shifts of perception.
Yeah.
It really is huge. Yeah. So you've been in this industry a long time, and you've been around the world.
A wee while.
And you've worked in different roles as well, from like ground level through to like now managing a club. You've managed, you know, teams, you know, for Les Mills, for countries, etc. Yeah. What does the future hold for you?
Great question. Well, I kind of know who I am and what I'm good at this stage in my life, which you would hope, you'd hope. I guess that's a hope for us all, that we actually realise at some point our why, our purpose, who we are, and have really some meaning to life. So I know that, and that's what leads me. And I've always said that. So who I am, just me. When anybody asks, you know, what do you do, or who I am, it's like, I'm Dave, this is what I do, I believe in people. My why is to ignite people's passion for life so that humanity has a chance to thrive. Now, I know that sounds a bit bullshit and a bit nonsense, but that is who I am. And that's what I do. Every interaction I have with anybody, I'm trying to get the best out in people and just help them be their best, because if I can do that, they will then go on, hopefully, and pass it on. You know, it's like you pass that back on. It's the ripples, we call it, right? It's, you know, you will do that, pay it forward. And that's my meaning in life. So if I can get to the end of my life and I'll have a smile on my face when I turn the lights out, you know, when if I can look back at those hundreds of thousands of moments and people that I've met and things I've done, and if that positive, I guess, ripple into the world is what it's all about. So that's what drives me, not the job or the role or the next thing. What drives me is the opportunity to change people's lives in a positive way. And I'm doing that right now as a club manager at Hillock. Makes sense. It gives me a huge opportunity to do that. But I'm also trained up in the background over the years, because once I understood who I was and what I was trying to do, then I started going down the coaching field and started doing all my certs and doing all that stuff, because it's just putting the academia piece to the back of what I know, right? It's strengthening what I know and giving me the tools and the methodologies to put into practice what I'm already kind of doing, which was Good. So I'm a coach, I guess, a performance coach, I would call myself, people and teams. I'm a performance coach. Mm-hmm. And performance, not, and I've got to be careful how I say that, because people think the fitness industry, again, the perception, fitness industry, oh, performance coach, you make people lift more, run faster. No, it's not that. I help you live your life better. A better performance as a human being is what I'm talking about. And trying to balance up what I call mind, body, and soul. So mind, body, and soul is what we focus on as a coach. But all the roles that I look for or step into now have to afford me that opportunity to be me and do that. So the future, whatever it looks like, would be allowing me to be me. I wouldn't jump into something that's not doing that. Now, I've had this conversation with so many people, because actually I could do that as a barista, right? If I wanted to, I could do this. I could have this impact on people's life selling coffee, because me being me, I will have these conversations while I'm selling coffee.
You would, yeah.
So you could, once you, and that's a nice thing, Ansi, in life, when you understand, as I say, who you are and what you're good at and who you really are. I feel I'm meant on the planet for why I'm here, because you can turn that to anything that you do. It's, jobs then just become a thing that you choose to do because it allows you the platform to show up or pay for the rent, pay for the money. No, the jobs becomes that piece of life where you're not reliant on it. It's just allowing you to move towards that, you know, who you are and have the impact in life that you have. Am I making sense? Have a lot of my...
Yeah, no, it's a vehicle, isn't it, to do that? Because I've always said this to people, like, you know, over the years, people say, oh, I want to be a trainer. And I'm like, but why do you want to be a trainer? Oh, I want to make a difference in people's lives. And I said, but you're doing that as an instructor anyway. Yeah. You know, like, it's a different role, a different job, you know. But, you know, if you see it, like I see it, as a vehicle to create more ripples, because if I can influence the instructor then influences their class participants. So there's a bigger ripple created by doing what I do. And, you know, so, yeah, so it is kind of, you know, it's finding the right vehicle to spread your message faster.
Absolutely. And I've brought that methodology across everything I've done. Like people and teams, I started applying it with the UK team. And I've just kept doing it and honing in on it. And actually getting better at it as I've been going through all these other teams. And the big thing that I would say, I guess if there's one foundation about it, it's creating emotional connections. Teams, people, whatever it is. If we can create emotional connections in life, that's so, so powerful. It's really those emotional connections that we have. And the same thing as instructors. If you can have your members, if you can create an emotional connection with your members, then that's invaluable. That's going back to how much does a club value you? That's invaluable. And if a member has an emotional connection with the club, that's invaluable. They ain't going to leave. So that's where I kind of feel like if we create these emotional connections in life, it goes deeper than just the shallowness of how look, feel, six-pack, that top end, or do I get access to a squat rack, or, oh, yes, it's just a body pump class. It's not. It's a class with Anne C, who has an emotional connection with me, who makes me feel amazing. And I then go away home, and because you've made me feel amazing, guess what? It's no surprise that I then make everyone else around me feel amazing. Mm-hmm. It's that, like you said, that ripple, you're carrying it on. But that's because there's a real emotional connection, not a shallow physical or any other connection. Mm-hmm. So to me, that's, again, it's another whole episode of the podcast. But
we'll definitely do a part two.
I know. The methodology behind that is that's what we're trying to create, is emotional connection. So what's, how do we do it? As I say, is another way to do it. And how do we address it through single, like people and teams? There's ways you can do it. There's absolutely ways, and there's strategies to put in place to do that. But when you create that emotional connection, to me, that's it. You've done it. You've done your job. Now, there's a thousand things that will come up in someone's life that might make them leave, or something might happen, because it's not necessarily related to just because they don't want to be there. It could be health issues, family issues, money issues, whatever it might be. There'll be a thousand things go on. But if you have an emotional connection with someone, that stuff transcends it. So even if they do leave, they will never forget. And they will come back, and they will build this bond that they'll always know who you are. And that's something that's super powerful. Yeah. Mm. It's that emotional connection with people.
And I will say, for you, for me, that is what you're all about, is connection and emotional connection. And I think that definitely is your legacy, you know, with, you know, all the lives that you've touched, and, you know, and then the ripples that those have created around the world. So like, we can chat for ages, though.
I know. And I mean, on that note, and I just throw this out, because again, it's along the way as business runs, you lose people and you gain people, right? As businesses go along, because I've been in teams where we've lost awesome people.
Yes.
Through no fault of their own, really. You know, it's just business processes and stuff that we go through. But I can honestly, hand on heart, sit back here, I don't think I've had anybody or any of my training teams that I've lost or have left that I've never loved and tried to help and support and develop and along the way, you know, and it's, that's important to me. It's having that connection with people that regardless of what you go in and do, you know, when we're sitting down face to face, if I bump into you in a bar or a coffee shop, there's a connection we've had. Wherever you left or you felt or whatever happened, you know that I was that support for you. And I'll always be, because that's who I was. It's who I am. I would never change. Because you know, I love the people I work with and I care for them in a deep way. And it's hard. It hurts me when I've got to let someone go. I can be honest, I've spent many a night crying and go to bed crying because of people I've had to lose. Really honest, great people. And some, as I say, through no fault of their own, some because it's just circumstances have happened and things have moved on, but business is business and you've got to kind of crack on, you've got to move forward. And that's the other thing about the business side of things. We have a vision and a plan and we're just going to keep moving.
Yeah.
Some people are right to take us there, some aren't. And but back to the intention, I think we need to know that, to me, it's the love, the care, the compassion that drives what we do, because innately that's who we are. And that's what I think I started off saying this right at the beginning when we started talking about this. And that's something I've seen in every instructor around the world. I've been in many countries around the world. And so, literally, when I think about it, it's got to be hundreds of thousands of instructors I've seen, and trainers and presenters and all sorts. And every one of them has the heart and the passion, the energy in the same space. We all do it for that care, the compassion, the giving, the want to make a difference. And that transcends everybody, every country, every race, every creed. That's the same thing that I've heard. And I've heard it. I can say it because I've seen it and I've heard it. I've had these conversations. I will sit down and say, hey, why do you do what you do? And the person sitting in Russia will be the same answer as the person sitting in the US. Mm-hmm. So that's, to me, is such an eye-opener to think, man, right around this world, you know, we've got hundreds of thousands of awesome people just trying to do really positive stuff.
Yeah.
That's the bit, again, that just, this works. This stuff works. You know, this is what gets you out of your bed in the morning and thinks, you know what? I know that, you know, igniting people's passion for life sounds a bit strange, but it actually works because I see it in action. I see it happening.
Mm.
And the world's a better place for it. Absolutely a better place for it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And the world's a better place with you in it too. So thank you. Yeah. Thank you so much for your time.
No worries.
Thank you so much for your time. And for listeners, you know, if you click on the description bit underneath this video or podcast, then you can connect with Dave. I know you're not huge on social media, but yeah, you were taking photographs at one point, weren't you? And sharing those as well.
Well, that's my music. I try and play the guitar and the photography and stuff I do as well. So I do my photography a bit. Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's my feet in the ground connection to life, is that, cool. That piece of things again. Yeah.
Awesome. So yeah, so Dave will have his links so you can follow him.
Subtitles to follow.
Awesome. Thank you.
It's so funny because everywhere I've been around the world, I've been away from Scotland for, I can't even remember when I left Scotland. It's been so long. And everywhere I go around the world, people are like, man, you've never left. You've never lost your accent. You're Scottish, right? And I think, yeah.
Your accent. It's not as bad.
I got Scotland.
Sometimes I've been to events and it's the Irish guys on the team that I'm like, huh? I don't understand you. Subtitles.
Exactly. Awesome. Anyway, lovely to see you.
Thank you.
Too long.
Take care.
And that's a wrap on today's episode with Dave Kyle, who has shown us the power of emotional connections in group fitness. Here are some of the key takeaways from our conversation. First and foremost, get a mentor or someone to inspire you to stay connected to the bigger picture. Make sure you're constantly prepping. It's about the process and the opportunities will come. There will be times when you have to decide to pack it in or step up. So because of that, your intention is super important. We need to make more of better connections throughout the club and working together as a team. I really think this, you know, as a freelancer, sometimes going into clubs, you don't feel part of the club. You don't feel part of the team. And so I think, you know, better steps need to be made on all levels and from all parties. So whether you're working in front of the house or teaching aqua, we're in this together. And on that note, we should change the messaging from getting fit to living a better life. It really is. You know, it's not just about exercising. We all want to live better, happier and healthier lives. And this is what we should be promoting. Dave reminds us to dig deeper, get underneath the surface level perceptions and truly get to know the person behind the workout. Building relationships and understanding each other's motivations can form stronger emotional connections that fuel our progress. Lastly, day's all about teamwork. And I can speak about this, you know, firsthand. Teamwork makes the dream work. Group fitness is all about coming together, supporting one another, and finding strength in the collective effort. By embracing emotional connections and fostering a sense of community, we get to unlock our true potential as individuals and as a group. So let's take these takeaways and apply them. Let's connect emotionally, support each other, and push ourselves to new levels. It's about the power of the mind, the heart, and the spirit coming together for a truly transformative experience. Thank you once again for tuning in to For the Love of Group Fitness podcast. Thank you for listening. I hope this encourages and inspires you. And more importantly, I hope you know how much I appreciate you for listening. So remember to subscribe, leave me a review, and join us for the next episode, which comes out weekly. And we'll continue to explore the incredible world of group fitness. Until then, stay motivated, stay inspired, and stay curious.